Chapter 4. College. There were many more poems after that, in spite of the cruel remark. Henry was sure he wanted to be a poet, or at least some kind of writer. He found inspiration for new poems all around him, in the forests, in the sea, all over Portland. As the first snow began to fall, and the brooks and ponds began to freeze over, he wrote, "Autumn has fled, and hoary winter now, o'er hill and dale has spread his drear domain, covering with fleecy snow the fertile plain. With piercing storms the winds tempestuous blow, and block the way. The streams refuse to flow." There was more to it, full 14 lines, and he signed it H. He still didn't have the courage to sign his complete name. Suppose his father or his father's friend thought this one was borrowed too. The Gazette printed the second poem, and there were no more unkind comments. "I'm sure," Henry confided to Anne, "that I can be a writer if I practice enough." But even though Henry Longfellow was only 14, his family was talking about sending him to college. That meant more studying and less time for writing poetry. "Of course, you and your brother will go to Bowdoin College," said Mr. Longfellow. The two boys knew that when Father spoke in that tone of voice, he meant what he said. But Stephen was bolder than Henry. "Why can't we go to Harvard, Papa?" he asked. Stephen knew perfectly well why not, and so did Henry. "Please remember," said Mr. Longfellow, "that your grandfather Longfellow helped to found Bowdoin College, and I am a trustee." Mrs. Longfellow was usually able to smooth things out, and she said, "Anyway, the first year, you will be studying at home. You boys are too young to go away to college just yet." So Stephen and Henry studied at Portland Academy another year, covering their freshman year subjects there. Even though Stephen was 2 years older than Henry, he started college the same year. Stephen was anxious to have school over with so that he could be a lawyer like his father. Henry was dreaming of other things. At last, the day arrived when they would leave for college. Anne and Betsy helped their brothers pack and stood by the side of the road with their mother, watching the two boys get into the stagecoach to travel north to Bowdoin College in Brunswick, Maine. "Goodbye, goodbye," everybody called. Mrs. Longfellow was crying. This was the first time any of her children had gone away from home. Stephen and Henry were too excited about their adventure to feel sad. "I'm going to meet a lot of new friends and have a lot of fun," dreamed Stephen. "I'm going to read all the poetry by all the poets in the world," dreamed Henry. Brunswick was a village on the Androscoggin River, and the college was at the edge of town. The stage horses trotted through town along the dusty country road and stopped in front of Bowdoin. There it was, much larger than Portland Academy. Bowdoin had four buildings, two of them made of brick, with green lawns all around. Young men wandered about on the lawns, or looked out of the windows, or stood talking in groups. Stephen and Henry found they would not have as much freedom as they did at home. They had to be up at 6 every morning and go to chapel for prayers. Then they had classes almost all day, and they had to stay indoors evenings to study. Henry didn't mind. He was doing what he wanted to do. At college, he found books, 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 and chances to write and write. He found new friends who liked books and writing as much as he. "Dear parents," Henry wrote home, "I feel very well contented and am much pleased with college life. Many of the students are very agreeable, and thus far, I have passed my time very pleasantly. Soon boxes began to come from home, from Betsy and Anne. Boxes of apples and pears and gingerbread, nuts and cookies. Stephen and Henry and their college chums were always hungry. Henry Longfellow was growing into an attractive young man, with fair skin and blue eyes and wavy brown hair. He was shy and gentle. His teachers liked him because he was so polite and cheerful, and because he studied so carefully. His classmates liked him too, but Henry's shyness kept him from making a great number of friends. In the same class at Bowdoin was another shy young man, Nathaniel Hawthorne. He and Henry didn't become friends until years later. Henry Longfellow was still in the Maine woods, even though he was away at college. He liked to take long walks among the tall pine trees and think about the Indians that once wandered there. He was reading books about the Indians in college, books that told how they had lived and dressed and thought. He was beginning to understand them as people. "I am learning to understand this persecuted race," he wrote home to his mother. "American Indians really have many beautiful customs and ideas and have been very badly treated by white people." Many careful letters went home to his father and mother, telling them exactly what he was doing. Henry wrote to his father about his lessons, his grades, his teachers, his friends. But his father was strict and formal, a stern lawyer. Henry couldn't tell him everything. When he wrote to his mother, he could write about the things that mattered most: his reading, his poetry. He was writing more and more poetry, and sometimes he sent his poems home to his mother. College went smoothly until Thanksgiving time rolled around. Then a feeling of homesickness set in. The Longfellow boys knew what fun Thanksgiving Day would be at home. "I want to go home for Thanksgiving," said Stephen.
"So do I," agreed Henry.
They found that other young men at the college felt the same way, and most of them were going home for Thanksgiving.
"We usually just go home and surprise our families," the other fellows told them. "Why don't you do that?"
The Longfellow boys looked at each other.
"What an idea! To surprise the family! To drive up in front of the house in Portland and burst in through the front door just as Thanksgiving dinner was being put on the table. They would be surrounded by parents and grandparents, brothers and sisters, all laughing and happy to have them home." They waited and schemed and planned for Thanksgiving Day. They counted up their money to make sure they had enough to rent the horse and carriage. On the great day, early in the morning, the air full of sharp frost, Stephen and Henry hurried to the stable.
"We want to rent a horse and carriage," they started to explain.
The man shook his head.
"We have to have a carriage. We have to go home for Thanksgiving."
"That's too bad," said the man who owned all the carriages. "But you see, all the boys at Bowdoin rent carriages to go home for Thanksgiving, and the last one has been taken. You should have reserved one in advance." Crushed, sorrowful, depressed, the Longfellow boys walked slowly back to school. No Thanksgiving dinner. No fun with the family. No fun at school either, because the campus was deserted. Everyone else had gone home. One of the teachers discovered the two lonely men and took them to his house for dinner. But it wasn't the same. Henry especially wanted to see his mother and Anne and Betsy. And he wanted to talk to his father about his future. Sad letters came from home in a few days. The family had really expected to be surprised. On Wednesday, the children were all on tiptoe, and the window seats were filled every time a carriage passed. "We waited dinner some time, and Ma kept some tidbits for you by the fire until night,
and our tea was delayed to a late hour. You see, my dear children, how much we are all interested in everything that concerns you, and how tenderly we love you," wrote Mr. Longfellow.